When I was a kid, I was obsessed with vampires. Stay with me. I honestly can't tell you soft spot in my heart for ghost stories, haunted houses, and Halloween. I don't think that the obsession had anything to do with drinking blood or the havoc that they wrecked at night. Instead, I liked that they wore black, they were mysterious and stealthy, they could fly, they possessed superhuman strength, and most of all, I liked that they lived forever. Well, forever, unless a sharp point of a wooden stake pierced their heart, or they were caught in the fiery rays of the sun. According to lore, vampires never grow old. They never change, much like Tom Cruise. And for some reason, I think that appealed to me at a young age. Yet, several years ago, an older and hopefully wiser me was contemplating what that would be like to live forever. First, I thought about trying to keep up with new clothing trends, not that I do that well now, and then figuring out the latest technology, about how different the world was 20 or 100 years ago. Then I thought about all of the people I loved, all my friends and family, people who presumably would die because they weren't immortal, and how difficult it would be to start over with new friends, that I would never have any more family. It was then that I realized that kind of existence isn't really that great at all. That to never grow old or to never change would be emotionally painful and lonely. And that to change, to learn, and to grow are fundamental to being alive. Something that the early church needed to learn as much as anyone. And why I feel this morning's text from the book of Acts is so appropriate for where we find ourselves in the midst of this pandemic. Just a few weeks ago, Jesus' followers were trying to sort out exactly what it meant for Jesus to be alive again. After the woman found the empty tomb, they told the other disciples, who then thought that that was just an idle tale. And then Jesus started showing up everywhere to prove to them that he was really alive. They had started to believe. They had started to live again. And like many of their ancestors before them, who had been freed from slavery in Egypt, the new baby church, who hadn't yet even adopted the name Christian, discovered that living means learning, changing, and growing. Which is where today's story picks up. By this point, they have agreed that it is best that nobody be in need or want. So all who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as they had need. Yet it seems that not everything is perfect. As we start today's part of the story, the Greek-speaking part of the church, the Hellenist widows are being neglected in the daily food distribution. From the way that the text tells the story, I don't think it was intentional. It was just happening. Maybe it was an oversight. Maybe there weren't enough people administering the food and they ran out of time. Yet I can also imagine the leaders, upon hearing this news, feeling a bit defensive, maybe doubling down on this is the way that it had to be. But the text tells us that's not what happened. They made a change for the good of all the people in the community. There wasn't a complaint or a, but we've always done it this way. Nor was there any sort of defensive casting of blame. They simply saw that there was a problem, and they did something to address it. They saw a need, and they appointed 7 more individuals to meet that need. They adapted. They changed. They grew. Knowing they couldn't continue doing things the way that they had always been done because people were suffering. Which makes me think about our church and our community post-pandemic. Like the first disciples after the resurrection completely turned the world upside down, this pandemic has turned the world upside down for us. While much remains, there's a lot that has shifted. Things have changed. We have changed. And maybe even more accurately, for some of us, our eyes have been opened to what isn't working for the good of all. As I think about all these things, I'm wondering what needs we must address for the good of all people in our community. I think about this with regard to our faith community, as in thinking about how our current needs for spiritual formation and the new patterns that we've begun to live with will shape how we come back together once we are in person. But I also cannot help but think about the deep, pervasive needs in our nation and our world that we have borne witness to over the years and have also become more pronounced in these past 14 months. About the economic disparity that exists between us and the difficulty that creates for some when trying to access services in a time of need. And I think about the worth and dignity of every human life, not just some. Each of the over 500,000 people who have died from COVID here in the US have made me wonder what value we've placed on each other's lives. While many of us have chosen to wear masks, stay home as much as possible, and find creative ways of being together safely, others of us have proclaimed they will live as they wish, even if it means endangering those around them. And if the trauma of COVID and all the restrictions that we've lived with for the past year are not enough, we've been repeatedly reminded, especially these past few weeks, of the way that Black and Brown lives are not fully valued in our country. The past few weeks, Derek Chauvin has been on trial for the death of George Floyd last summer. While a few miles away, Dwayne Wright was killed by police after being stopped for having an air freshener hanging from his rearview mirror. 13-year-old Adam Toledo was shot and killed by police this week. An Army Second Lieutenant Caron Nazario was pepper sprayed as he expressed his fear of what might happen to him during what should have been a nonviolent traffic stop. Black Lives Matter is a modern day Hellenist voicing the pain of being neglected. The pain of hundreds of years of ingrained assumptions and biases. The end in death, pain, suffering, and missed opportunities for so many. This is our moment to hear how the members of our community are not fully included and loved as we are. And then to do something about it. To be bold as Stephen, one of those seven appointed by the disciples, in voicing that word and calling out the injustice that pervades our society. To announce to the world and to ourselves that we love our neighbors as much as we love ourselves. To do the work within ourselves and our community to dismantle our biases so that all may truly live. And to trust, just as Stephen does, that no matter what happens, God goes with us into the midst of it. Something we are reminded of in Stephen's rebuttal to those who are arguing with him. First, he says, "The glory of God appeared to our ancestor Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia. And then God moved with them in the tent of testimony. Eventually, when the people desired a more permanent dwelling for God, Solomon built the temple." Eventually, Stephen reminds them that God made all of this, that God dwells everywhere and will be with us in all that we do, that God is not only present here in this building where I sit, but is with us wherever we are, in your homes or as you go out to work and to play. God is here in our midst in this online format. God is here and will always be here. In this new resurrection reality, we can see that God has even gone into death and is creating new life out of it. God has gone into the trauma of the last 14 months, everything from the physical distance to the lost jobs and floundering economy to our own declining mental health and the destruction of our bodies by COVID. God is in our midst as we wrestle with what changes need to be made so that all may live, just as God intends. And God will be here in whatever happens after that, always loving us, even into death. Because nothing will ever separate us from the love of God. And it is that love that emboldens us to make changes.